Good afternoon. My name is Nathan Ramsey, and I'm with Landisca Regional Council. And I'd like to begin our weekly Landisca COVID-19 response calls. We've been holding these calls every Thursday at 1 o'clock to provide a regional update of what's happening throughout our four counties and certainly at the state and federal level regarding the response to COVID-19. We all know these are uncharted times for us. Different than probably any we've ever experienced. And we're so grateful for all the work that's happening throughout our region to respond to these unprecedented challenges. Before we start the call, I want to remind everyone that this call will be taped. We will archive these calls on the Landisca website. You can go to Landisca, and on our homepage, we'll have a COVID-19 section. You can click on that, and there'll be an archive of previous calls. Also, everyone on the call will be muted. So we're on a large call with so many participants. We're having to do that for security purposes and also just to make sure the call moves forward. But if you have any questions, you can present those in the chat box if you're joining us from your computer, so we'd encourage you to do that, and we will share the questions with the presenters. Also, if you're not joining us through a computer but your phone, you can text me at 828-768-3216. Again, that's 828-768-3216, and I will try to watch my text messages and to make sure someone would have like to present a question in that way. We're excited today that again we can have the governor's office with us. Drew Christie, that represents Governor Cooper in the western part of the state, is with us. So we want to turn the call over to Drew, and Drew can give us an update from the governor's office on what the latest news is from Raleigh. We certainly appreciate Drew taking his time. Drew's been very faithful to join us for these calls and give us a firsthand account of the latest news from the governor's office. And so, Drew, thank you for joining us. Thank you for your leadership and all the work you're doing to support our region, support our local governments.
Thank you so much, Nathan. And thank you for all your leadership in organizing these calls. It's been very informative. For not only myself, but I'm sure for everyone. So thank you for having these, and thank you for everybody that's attending these. We've almost been in a week now into phase one of easing restrictions. Again, this is not a this is a modification of the previous stay-at-home orders. North Carolina has doubled the amount of testing we have done. We're up to between 5,000 and 7,000 total tests every day. Many retail partners, such as Walgreens, Walmart, and Harris Teeter, are opening up testing sites. The North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services will be adding a list of testing locations statewide to the website. I think that's live and active now. We all do need to remember the three W's because the virus is still circulating and there is no cure yet. The three W's are wear a face covering, wash your hands frequently for at least 20 seconds, and wait 6 feet apart from each other. Another big item on the list is unemployment insurance benefits. As of yesterday, there have been 878,279 people that have, individuals that have filed claims. There have been 523,000 people that have been paid for a total of $1.8 billion in payments made thus far. And yes, that's a lot, but there are still a lot of things that we are working on to speed up that process and get people paid in a timely manner. And so we are DES, Department or Division of Employment Securities, is working to speed up that process. Also, this week, Governor Cooper has established the state's task force for emergency repurposing of manufacturing to help increase the amount of PPE gear made here in North Carolina. So that partnership has partnered with the North Carolina Manufacturing Extension Partnership, the Carolina Textile District, and the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina to identify and collaborate with manufacturers statewide who are able to pivot their operations to produce critical personal protective equipment, including face shields, hand sanitizer, cloth masks, gowns, and more. The task force has worked with over 300 North Carolina companies. If anybody knows of a company that wants to do business with the state, I would refer you to go to the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services website, and they have a procurement form for the state. Also, companies that are not looking to be purchased through the state, but through private businesses, I refer you to supplyconnector.org, and they have a place there where companies can work in the private sector. That's all I have. I'm here for the entirety. I should be at least, so I'm happy to answer any questions anybody may have.
Drew, could you share that link you mentioned about the testing sites? If that's available now, if it's not up yet, that I understand, but you have the opportunity, you could share that in the chat box.
Okay.
And I know you can't give us any advance notice of any future governor, the announcement from Governor Cooper. As you well know, there's a lot of discussion about the reopening phases. I know the number of cases, is still somewhat stable, but and actually I think still increasing at some level across the state. And so I know the governor came out with benchmarks on when he would go to phase two. Is there any additional clarification you can provide, or we just need to stay tuned to future announcements from the governor's office?
Yes. We are still reviewing all of the data. Again, as of right now, the scheduled end date of phase one and moving into phase two is Friday, May the 22nd. That is a temporary marker. We are evaluating all of the data to see if how the numbers of tests are looking, if they are continuing on a downward trajectory, as well as percent positive cases over testing, making sure that's decreasing, making sure the number of hospitalizations is decreasing. We are still seeing that downward trend. But again, May 22nd is a temporary deadline. If we start seeing that number increasing, we may have to extend phase one for longer. But again, as of right now, we are seeing a downward trajectory, which is good. That's what we want to see. But we want to make sure that we are looking out for everybody across the state. So that date may be pushed out depending on how numbers are looking in the next week or so.
Well, Drew, we appreciate your guidance and this information. Thank you for the governor's leadership in these difficult times. Referenced the governor's announcement regarding his task force on PPE. And so for today's call, and to give everyone just sort of a forecast of what we're going to discuss today, we're going to have a discussion about personal protective equipment and the work that's happening in Western North Carolina and literally throughout the state to and beyond to procure the manufacturing of that equipment, but also to help those individuals, organizations, businesses that need PPE. And then toward the end of the call, we're going to hear from David Thompson with Buckham County Schools. He's the Director of Student Services David's going to talk about student mental health and all the things they're working on, because, you know, this is a traumatic time for all of us, but certainly in you're a student in school, you can't see your friends, you know, like you normally could, especially for those that are like high school seniors or, you know, the milestones you would think in your educational experience, you know, they're going to miss out on a lot of those things this year that most of us were able to experience when we were in school. So with that, will David will help lead that discussion toward the end of the call. But now I'd like to turn it over to Erica Anderson. Erica is the Director of Economic and Community Development with Landis-Sky Regional Council. And Erica will lead this discussion about personal protective equipment. Would encourage Drew, if you have anything to add regarding, you know, the governor's task force, you know, you're welcome to do that at the end of this discussion. So, Erica, thank you for leading this discussion, and I'll turn the call over to you.
Thank you, Drew. That was a good segue earlier, kind of framing the PPE discussion. I've been working with a fairly large team in the Western region here to find PPE, source it, also look at potential for aggregation for smaller entities, in coordination with the Dogwood Health Trust and MAHEC and a broad range of other partners. So I'm really pleased that Emily Breedlove and Sarah Wood can join us today to talk more about what their efforts are. These are two platforms that work to connect those that are looking for PPE with entities that are manufacturing or sourcing it. And in our region, we've had many companies switch from whatever manufacturing or production they were doing, from alcohol to campers in Silver Sports case, into production of various PPE. So I'm looking forward to having Sarah Wood start us off. She's the founder of the Good Talk and is also a founder of the Supply Connector. And then we'll switch and have Emily Breedlove, who's the CEO of Breedlove & Company and a co-founder of COVID Mobilize, talk about their platform. So Sarah, are you ready to go?
I am ready. Thank you for having me. Yeah, I appreciate you, Erica, for including us in this conversation. And Drew, I also appreciate being you know, recognized in that announcement the other day from your office. We've been honored to be a part of that team with NC State and Emergency Management, and, you know, excited to continue that work. And Nathan, thank you again for having us all here to discuss this. I think I can speak for kind of all the people working on this front. We feel that sense of urgency and are really kind of geared up to help, especially those in our backyard. So I'll just give you a quick overview. When you first land on the supplyconnector.org site, you can quickly go directly into the directory. You don't have to list anything to start searching. So you can see here, you can quickly, you know, click through. We also have very easy navigation on the top of the screen, which I did not include in this particular slide. So next slide. Once you do get in and list whether you can provide PPE or whether you can supply raw materials to those manufacturers, or if you are a healthcare institution, for instance, or a public transportation group that needs PPE, you can submit those needs and you can submit what you can provide. So it's very simple. In our intake form, we also are collecting full address information now so that we can drill down. And Erica, this is something we discussed. You know, we can drill down by county now, by state, by city. We are a national platform, so we have, and we've been, I guess, up since April 10th, and really working to kind of connect with groups like yours first. We have limited resources as a donated kind of effort right now to do the outreach, but we have gotten quite a bit of traction since going live and are participating in some national groups like the National Governors Association, and are on some working groups around the country with other national platforms to try to coordinate and make these efforts more efficient. I think we can all understand that we may not have all the resources in our backyard. That's where we're going to dip into first. So we're going to look at North Carolina. We're going to look at our region, see who's producing that, try to procure from them first. But then after, if we can't find what we need, we're going to be able to reach out beyond North Carolina to find those needs. So once you've submitted, you are in the directory. But again, any of you can go on and search the directory currently without creating a listing. We have a advanced search here showing a lot of the critical needs that have been identified over the last 7 weeks. And then we have it separated by whether you're a finished goods manufacturer, whether you are providing manufacturing capabilities, whether you are providing raw materials, or whether you're providing services. And all of this started because I was working with a client in the outdoor industry who could provide automation services and had 100 CNC machines, you know, in their shop ready to produce something for the effort. And they wanted some help finding ways to do that. So we kind of used that early information to build this platform and create a really low barrier to entry for people to get in and use it. So you can scroll down and you can see how the listings show up. So you can filter by that group up above, and then everything is filterable through these filters. And then when you get in to see the full listing, so when you go to the next slide, you'll be able to see that this is a snapshot, but then you can dive in deeper and get a little bit more information from the company. You can directly access their phone number, you can directly access their email, you can directly access their website. And you're seeing an admin view here, so you can also see where they can edit their entry. So if they have, if they're making a different, you know, product or their products change, they can go in and update that at any time. So the way that this works as far as our facilitation is concerned, and this is an area we want to grow if we are able to kind of secure some funding to continue to grow our team. All of these companies, and what we've learned over the last 7 weeks of doing this, is that they really do still want and expect that handholding. They want that facilitation of the connection. So while we're readily providing it to them and also pushing notifications to them for matches within the platform, for instance, if a manufacturer is needing plastics to make their face shields, they will get a push notification telling them that hey, there's a new supplier providing that if you are in need. Or healthcare institution needing N95 masks, here are all the N95 mask manufacturers that you can tap into. We are doing limited one-on-one facilitations as much as we can, but as a small team, you can only imagine with the need out there, that can be a little overwhelming. I don't think I had another slide. I'm trying to remember. I think that was it. If you want to scroll down just to make sure. So.
That was the final slide.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. I will say we have the most traction in North Carolina at this point. However, we do have 25 states represented as well. And we're working directly with other states to try to stand up platforms to meet these needs, including the state of Oregon that recently signed on through their economic development department. So we are interested in continuing to develop this platform specifically as a tool for groups like yours to help meet their needs. So while we have created something simple, easy to adopt, easy to use, it's not the end of what we are, you know, wanting to do with this, and encourage a conversation with you all to be able to do that. So I will leave it at that and open to questions or however you all want to proceed.
Great. I think maybe let's move to Emily, and then we'll come back and take questions for both. Does that sound okay?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Hey, everyone.
All right, Emily.
I'm Emily. I'm Emily Breedlove. And I just have to say, first and foremost, thank you guys all so much for the work that you guys are doing through this process. I have to say, I've never been more happy to not work for the government anymore than being able to ride out this wave, because I can only imagine how challenging this has been. So thank you for everything that you guys are doing on a local level. So I am one of the founders of COVID Mobilize, which is a web app that's focused on supporting the recovery and the response needs associated with the pandemic. And we're really lucky in that, you know, early on in the process, we were able to work really closely with the Supply Connector team and really get a sense of how these two systems can really support one another. And so, you know, while we do have elements that support PPE, we were able to really divide and conquer in partnership with them to address the more wraparound support around the response and recovery. All right, if you want to switch the page. Okay, so this is our homepage. As you can see, the screenshot of our web app. And there we go. So a little backstory, you know, this whole thing was born out of the crisis. When all of this stuff happened, our team, we were able to see that there were really four main agencies that were responding to COVID. There were the government agencies, the nonprofit organizations, healthcare providers, and the for-profit businesses. Next slide. But what became really obvious through this process was that the for-profit businesses, for the most part, you know, due to just the safety of the public, were told to shut down and go home, which we all understood. But one of the big challenges was that these companies were the ones that were maintaining a lot of the expertise and talent, the raw materials, the production capacity, and the hard assets that were needed in order to respond quickly to the pandemic. Next slide. So it was during this process that organically a network of around 50 CEOs in Asheville started to form. CEOs that were sitting on pretty stable companies that were recognizing that they had ways to help, but there wasn't really a mechanism to engage these businesses. So within about 48 hours, we built a makeshift platform to try and build an inventory and get a sense of who the companies were, what kind of assets they had, what resources they had available. We started with a WordPress directory and Slack channel and Airtable, a lot of what a lot of these efforts really started with, but very quickly, we were inundated with information, with requests, with need, and we recognized that there was no way even a team of really talented founders could manage all of this, that we needed to lean into what we knew, and that was how to build big companies and how to build technology and larger systems. So that was when we then circled up and recognized that we needed to start looking at smarter technology like a web app. So next slide. So then the COVID Mobilized platform was launched, and we are a partnership between three companies that, if it wasn't for the act of God of the COVID pandemic, we would have never collaborated on this project. We've got Nomadic Software, which is a state-of-the-art software development agency that specializes in platform management. Security Camera Warehouse, which is a $10 million Inc. 500 security camera company. And then Breedlove & Company, which is my government and public relations agency. And so we joined forces in a totally new way than we ever thought we were signing up for. And really quickly, we're accepted as one of the six North Carolina tech companies accepted into the RIOT, which is the Raleigh Internet of Things Accelerator. They have a Mission R accelerator. So we hit the ground running, and we started building the web app in order to build the kind of tool that we needed in order to do this better. Next slide. So we immediately jumped into discovery calls with a lot of you guys. We talked to economic developers, we talked to councils of government, we talked to actual companies and organizations. And what we found were six core needs that people were expressing was they needed a smarter database. They needed something that was bigger and more robust, something that would organize and collect better data so that we could make better decisions quickly, that they were able to filter by economic sector and county, that we could look at county lines, streamline communication because we were all inundated with needs and communication through this process, have a system that created less demand on staff so that there were some matchmaking things that could happen automatically through the system, and then create the opportunity for real-time asset mapping so we had a better understanding of what we had available in order to pivot and address these needs. Next slide. So after finding all of that, we then built it. We built the web app that has all of that core functionality. As of right now, it is completely free and open to the public. This right here shows some of the the project listings. So people, organizations are able to go in and create a profile, organizations like businesses, nonprofits, and government agencies, and they're able to define who they are as an organization, as well as post active projects. And so those projects can either be around needs that they have or resources that they have available. And then we're able to then filter based upon those things, project type, the economic sector categories and subcategories, as well as by state and county. Next slide. So some of the things that we've created is we've got this smarter directory system that you're able to look at the locations of the businesses and the locations of the projects, as well as what their service area is. So if you know, for a council of government, you're able to see what is in your county to be able to prioritize that. And then next slide. We also have real-time communication within the system so that organizations and points of contact are able to connect either within the system or it sends notifications directly to whatever source they're looking for, whether it's a text message or an email, or we actually have a messaging system within the database. And the next slide. And we're able to actually have multiple representatives from an organization, multiple users that are able to then share this information in real time and constantly update their profile so that we can both matchmake and geolocate the resources on a real-time basis. Next slide. Okay, so where we're really different from Supply Connector is, you know, that we knew that they were able to cover the PPE manufacturing conversation really deeply. We were able to then look at all of the other supply chain needs and all the other sectors that were tied to a lot of this work. So some of the spaces that we're able to get a lot of traction in right now is some of the economic development work and the manufacturing. We're working with biotech and some health and medical research facilities, as well as now getting a better sense of our food challenges and the supply chain issues that we have around agriculture and food production. Next slide. So what we've discovered through this process is that, you know, COVID Mobilize is kind of the first system that we've built, and where we accidentally built a business, we also accidentally built a system that was far more advanced than we thought it would be. So the potential for this software is much bigger than COVID, and we're now getting a better sense of how this is a tool that can help both with the current disaster response efforts, but also the long-term recovery, and getting a sense of how this system can be repurposed and structured around regional or sector specific needs. We've now got some more highly custom features that we're able to work in, like inventory management, more detailed economic modeling and gap analysis around the larger shifts within all of these sectors. And really how we can leverage the current shifts that are happening in order to onboard users and start collecting the data. Next slide. So our biggest thing right now is we are trying to now work with organizations that we know that this would help. Our biggest goal from the beginning is to build a system that could save lives and save jobs. And so while we would absolutely love to work in Western North Carolina and have you guys be a place where we can definitely create some traction, we are, like Supply Connector, actively knocking on doors all across the country to make sure that this tool is available to the organizations and the government departments that can use it in order to make that kind of traction. So thanks again for letting us share, and I encourage you to go check out the website. You can sign up for free or email us if you want to set up any kind of conversation around how you could use it. Thank you.
Thank you, Emily and Sarah. Thank you both. Does anyone have any questions? Either Emily or Sarah.
And Erica, to remind everyone, if you have questions, just enter those in the chat box. And also, if you're joining us by phone, you can text me at 828-768-3216. That's 828-768-3216 with any questions you may have. Erica, one question I have, you know, for both of our presenters is, right now, you know, as we open up our economy, I'm anticipating lots of businesses and organizations will start to need PPE that haven't needed it previously. So we're probably going to see an onslaught of need for hand sanitizers and masks and other things. You know, and are we prepared to address that? And where do local businesses go to to find that kind of thing?
Yeah, we were anticipating
that a lot.
Yeah, we were anticipating that same problem. And a few weeks ago, well, I guess it's been about a month now, we connected with another partner in the outdoor industry who has a wholesale B2B platform where she typically would be selling outdoor industry gear into universities. She basically pivoted her platform and we're calling it the Goods Connector. And it is a wholesale B2B platform for businesses trying to reopen. We are pre-registering people now so that we can have, you know, a university, we can have a retail business, we can sell approved, vetted devices from U.S. manufacturers to those businesses trying to reopen. And it will include all devices that are being recommended by the CDC and then some that we think should have been, like hands-free door openers and things that we know some of our local manufacturers here are making. And we're doing that in a collaborative effort with that organization, as well as, you know, working with the groups that are trying to help the manufacturing extension partnerships across the country as well. We're trying to work with them so that we better understand how we can fully network this and kind of create a system that can be turned on and off given any kind of problem that may arise, but also be the generator for U.S. manufacturing to be a leader in this effort now and for the economy as it is reopening and changing and developing beyond. So we see that opportunity. They can obviously make direct connections currently in the platform, but we do encourage any businesses to go and register at thegoodsconnector.com.
And oftentimes I think what you know, some organizations encountered is the business had the PPE available, but there was like, you needed to purchase 10,000 of something or a large quantity, you know, and maybe that was a small business that did not need that amount. Are businesses able to purchase in smaller quantities?
Yes, they will be through the Goods Connector specifically. That is what it's specifically set up to do, is do those smaller quantities. And we also are working with a couple national platforms that are providing funding for those larger group purchases. So for groups like MAHEC, we discussed, you know, might be interested in organizing a larger group buy, or a hospital group might be, you know, interested in doing a larger group buy and then disseminating that down. We do have access to some groups that can provide funding to help procure those larger purchases.
We see a comment in the chat box from David Thompson with Buncombe County Schools. Certainly when schools go back into session, whenever that is, there's probably going to be a tremendous need for schools to address this. So we appreciate all the work you're doing to help us move forward and protect people. Erica, is there anything else you want to share? Or I know you've been working on a lot of other initiatives as well in this space and provide a lot of leadership for our region.
Thank you. I think both the platforms we're hopeful, going back to that question real quick about smaller lot sizes, and I think one of the real draws for both the platforms is that matchmaking between supply and demand. So those that are looking for things, even if it is smaller amounts, I'd encourage you all to take a look at those and see how they could help you. On another kind of larger framework, we are working on a project with a bunch of different partners to try to focus on pivoting and some reshoring of manufacturing in the far western region. So so that's something to hopefully will generate some longer term resiliency in providing some of these opportunities for our communities. So look forward to that kind of coming together. And thank you so much for letting us share this information with you all.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, thank you all for being with us. You know, this is an amazing part of what makes our community so special, that when we have this tremendous need, how people pull together and try to find solutions. And so the supply connector and COVID mobilize are two great examples of things that weren't in place the 1st of March and now are really providing great value to so many. So we congratulate you for that, and we appreciate the amazing work you're doing, and just let us know how we can be helpful. We will include your presentations on our website, so if people want to reference those in the future, we'll include those presentations. And again, if you have any questions later on, you can reach out to me at LambdaSky at nathan@lambdasky.org, and I will share those questions to the appropriate person. So thank you so much. Drew, did you have anything you wanted to add from the governor's task force? I know that he just stood that up the other day, but we appreciate the governor taking leadership on this.
No, that everything was perfect there. It's great information for everybody to have, and I want to thank it all the, you know, Supply Connector and Emily Breedlove for providing all this information for everybody.
Thank you so much, Drew. And again, thank you, Sarah, Erica, Emily, for your presentation and sharing with us today. Now I'd like to turn it over to David Thompson with Buncombe County Schools. David's the Director of Student Services. And David's going to share with us the work that their school system is doing, but I know many of our other school systems are as well, to try to address student mental health and the needs that this crisis has brought on to better support our students. David, thank you for joining us.
Sure, thank you for letting me join you today. Christy asked me if they would talk with you guys this week after I did some presentation for our county government briefing the other day. Yeah, no time in the history that I've been with schools, which is now about 40 years, have we had to make such a tremendous change in everything that we do as quickly as we've made it over the course of this pandemic. We had three major priorities as a school district when we began to notice that we were going to need to transition to a virtual environment. One is providing good quality instruction to our students. The second was that we provide some basic needs and provide resources for feeding our families and our students who might be food insufficient. And the third one was keeping our employees whole and not, you know, keeping all of our employees employed and engaged in work within the district. Mine actually had a fourth one. My fourth one was to make sure that we do not forget the social, emotional, mental health needs of our students and providing those through our community and through our school staff. So I primarily, as Director of Student Services, work with our school counselors, our school social workers, our school nurses, and our community on really integrating resources and supports for all students, family, and staff. So recognizing that what we are going through and are continuing to go through is truly a collective trauma, that, you know, while we look at the definition of trauma as being really only in the perception of the person themselves, some of our families have perceived their experience here as highly anxious daily and interfering with their ability to work. Some have experienced loss in their families of friends or relatives who they have lost to the virus. The reaction of each individual is their personal reaction and their personal interpretation of that event. For some of our families, that has truly been traumatic. For some of our staff, the anxiety that it has been produced to make this transition to helping their children on a daily basis with academics without preparation for that has been truly a traumatic experience for them. So as we look at how we have supported our families, we and our students and our staff, we've looked at that role of our mental health providers. We've looked at the role of our counselors, our social workers, our nurses. We've put in place some things like on day one, our child nutrition department was feeding families and delivering food to homes. On day three, we were providing the instruction. And included in that instruction, our counselors built and delivered social emotional learning skills. They reached out to individual families. They're doing individual counseling sessions virtually. Our mental health providers were able to switch with a lot of flexibility from state government around definitions of mental health services. We're able to switch over to allow some telehealth services that were previously not allowed for children. That so they adapted the rules to do that. So we're offering virtual telehealth and telephonic mental health services to individuals, to students. We shifted our day treatment, our facility-based services that we have for a small group of our most needy students. We shifted those into more of an intensive in-home model so that we've not forgotten those. But even with all of that, probably one of the primary limitations in being able to provide these services has been the inadequacy of our countywide broadband. There's not there. So having our students have access to that the essential services that we have available to them has been very limited. We probably see 20 to 25% of our students who are not engaging at all with our academics or with our mental health supports. Our providers are seeing a huge reduction in the number of people who are accessing their telehealth services. We've seen a real reduction in working with our Department of Health and Human Services and our DSS, that the number of calls around child abuse, neglect, have gone down and not gone up during this period of time, because there's not a lot of our school staff who are really good at picking up on what those things are. We know that they're still there. We know that children are still experiencing these things. We know that family struggles are still continuing. So as we prepare for a return of our students, and hopefully that will happen in the fall, is that we are looking at what are our students bringing back to us that we have, what challenges do we have to help meet? One we know is that we probably have about that 20% of kids who are not accessing instruction, who are going to come with some real academic deficits. And that's our primary role as school, is to teach kids. So we know that we are going to have to really beef up how we deliver and what we deliver, and both the quality and the content and the intensity of the academic resources we give. But we also know that we cannot do that to the exclusion of our students' social emotional needs. Those things have to be hand in hand. And so we're working really hard with a multidisciplinary group of students and parents and teachers and counselors to really build what will a good reentry model look like that is really focused on resiliency. Some of you probably have had some training or exposure to resiliency, but if you haven't, and Nathan, I don't know if you're able to share hosting, and I can share a visual, but if you can, I'll be glad to share some visual. If not, just let me know, and I won't, and I don't have to have it. But as we're talking about resiliency, sometimes resiliency is kind of defined as that ability to bounce back when a traumatic event happens. I don't know that that's not one of my favorite definitions. What I'd like to think of resiliency is more in terms of much more like a balance scale, where on one side of the scale, you have the good things that are present in a person's life those good things make us feel good. They keep us able to respond and able to stay pretty balanced and react with our bodies and our brains in the right way. on the other side of the scale, we have those negative things in our lives, those hard things that we experience. And those hard things are those things that bring us down, that cause us that emotional reaction and help us to you know, really dysregulate our whole nervous system. So as we know, the brain experiences any traumatic event or any ongoing event that causes stress, we know that the natural reaction is that the as our nervous system picks up those senses in our body and they are processed in our brain through the limbic system, that our initial reactions to some of those things is either to be angry and fight and to overcome it, to be able to run away and just deny that it's happening at all, or to just shut down, just completely shut down. So it's fight, flight, or freeze. So those are the three basic reactions to stress. So when we look at that in the context of resiliency, when those negative things happen and we don't have the good things in place to balance them or those supports in place to balance them, then our bodies are not able to react, and we are doing one of those things of fight, flight, or freeze. We also know that one's total life experiences and biological makeup determines how quickly they react. Some of our families don't need as many good things and on one side to balance all of those things because they've got enough to do that. So resiliency is a constant balancing act. As we experience this particular situation of the pandemic, we know that we're not doing a one-time intervention to say, here's how we can make this better. Here's what we can do to help. Here's what we can do to support. Right? We are responding to this as though it is a recovery period, just like it is after some kind of critical incident management system. The recovery is going to be going on for a long, long time, because not only have we experienced the pandemic, but the pandemic is ongoing. There's not a clear answer for when this is going to go away. So we're going to have to build a system that is ongoing for both that academic and behavioral support. What we're hearing from families, what we're hearing from our families is a lot of anxiety, and rightfully so, when we are getting phone calls that are, we have some really agitated individuals because their initial reaction is, I've got to fight somebody, I've got to find somebody to blame, I've got to do something about this. But it's really that normal reaction, a very normal reaction to the stress that they're experiencing. So the response for us is to provide that source of safety. We've got to provide a safe environment. We've got to provide answers. We've got to provide solutions. We've got to present with calm and to engage in a problem-solving process to try to help that person come back to the point where we can do problem-solving. So while we look at that resiliency scale, we mostly recognize that we all operate within a resiliency zone, that we experience positive things, we experience negative things, but within a range. Most of us have the skills to stay within a particular zone of reacting. During an ongoing crisis, there are two basic reactions. One is that you can get really stuck on high, and it's like driving a car, and you get your foot stuck on the gas. Your reactions, your body's reactions, your brain's reactions are so fast that you're not able to have that rational thought about how to respond to it. You're not able to realize that I need to take my foot off the gas and put it on the brake. It's stuck. You don't know what to do. You don't know to cut the car off. You don't know how to steer to the side of the road. You're just stuck there and not able to react. The other reaction is that we have that brake pedal stuck, that we're so stuck on that brake pedal that we know we need to take action, but we can't do anything about it. We're just stuck there. And I think that's what we're hearing from a lot of our families as we talk with them. They know they need to do something. They know they need to take some actions, but they are just so overwhelmed that they can't make it happen at the time. So hearing that, we are trying to meet those needs. We're with this multiple group of people that we're doing, we're trying to pull together, how do we support our students? What do we do to put in place both the instruction, the support, the check-ins every day, the meeting of their emotional needs, having the services and supports in place around mental health and just school counseling and school social work, meeting basic needs. How do we do those things while also paying attention to integrating all of that into instruction and academics so that they can get those academic needs met? So that is our challenge as we plan. The third part is how do we then support our staff? Because many of our teachers are bringing back in some of the same experiences and anxiety into classrooms where we don't know how to plan for what is our class is going to look like. Do we have all of our kids there at one time? How do we social distance? Do we wear masks? How do we get our kids into, are our kids going to be able to play sports? Are they going to be able to even do, you know, to sing in a choir or play in a band? Because we know that you know, what we're hearing is that choirs are the super spreaders. So can we do normal activities? Can we have a normal schedule? We don't know what all of those things are going to look like right now. We don't know how to have activities in the buildings. We don't have a lot of firm plans about what school will look like yet. So right now we're just kind of focusing on the mental health supports we put in place. In the middle of all of this, we've had one of our mental health providers who serves students in schools has found that they did not have the capacity to continue serving all of our schools. So we've gone out and had to find another provider for two of our feeder patterns of schools in Buchanan during the pandemic. And that was just the result of the pandemic. Their low engagement rates reduced their income to the extent that they couldn't support all of the staffing that they had to serve our schools. So all of those impacts are kind of lining up on top of each other. And we're kind of trying to rise to meet the challenge of all of it with the idea that we are going to be resilient. We are going to find a way through this, and we are going to help our students. We're going to help our families. We're going to take our time, and we're going to approach this methodically, reasonably, and sit in with sensitivity to the folks who present to us. So that's kind of a general overview of where we are. I think understanding that a person's reaction is normalizing that reaction, that is certainly what you're feeling, and acknowledging that goes a long way to re-engaging our staff and our students to have a different response, to change the way we do business in schools. We don't want to come back to school the same way it was when it left us. We know that the lack of the internet access, the lack of equal services is bringing back into our schools a lot of inequities between those kids who've had those supportive services and parents in place and those who haven't. Some who are making progress, some who haven't had instruction at all.
David, what are some of the things that our community can help you and your team as you try to support your students? Because, you know, I know a lot of work's happening. You know, we heard from our school superintendents a couple of weeks ago about, you know, that conversation quickly pivoted to connectivity and broadband because many students don't have access to, you know, that at home. And you've mentioned the inequities that we see in our schools. I would assume, you know, there's many students that the best part of their day is when they're at school. And so when they're challenged and when the family situation they're in, you know, they are unable to go to school now. So what are things that our community can do? I know y'all are doing a wonderful job feeding them and providing food to students, even though they're not in your buildings. But what are things we can do to help them with their mental health? Because, you know, it's a traumatic time for all of us.
Well, I think we're certainly working with a messaging. You guys will be working, you know, many of you connected to business and industry are working with the parents. So understanding that we will be actively trying to engage parents in our process too. and having some consistent messages about what are the services available that are available through you guys to their parents for their own self-care. You know, because we could, while we can provide some services for students, we understand that parents are as employees as productive folks need to work. They need to be engaged and working, but we also need to recognize that their behavioral health, their own emotional needs, impacts the needs of their students, of their children who are our students. So I think that certainly is incorporating some self-care strategies, some wellness, health and mental health wellness into work environments would certainly be something that you guys can try to work toward. The other is you mentioned that superintendents are right. We really do need connectivity to help become a little more equitable in how we provide services in a virtual environment. That has been probably the biggest part of that we try to overcome, is that just trying to reach the students and having the right information to know where to find those kids who are not engaging has been one of our biggest obstacles around both meeting both academic and behavioral needs. So those are the two big pieces that I can think of for this particular group.
Well, and I would anticipate, you know, as more of our community who lost their jobs, certainly, you know, when they are able to qualify for unemployment benefits and things like that, that will help them. But, you know, probably more families are undergoing economic stress. You know, we see unemployment rates probably now 15% to 20%. And so even families that were doing pretty well economically before this, you know, may be struggling now. And then for those families that were struggling even before this, you know, they're probably in a more severe condition. So if you have any guidance to us, I think also for the, you know, students that aren't able to participate in extracurricular activities like, you know, youth sports and band and other things, you know, a lot of students, that's a way they can find some release for their stress. And so a lot of that's not available to them right now. So, you know, any guidance you could provide us, we will certainly share your presentation on, and I'm sorry we weren't able to provide that on that's today's okay. call, but we'll place that on our website. But okay. Any guidance you can provide to us on how we can support your students and their families during this difficult time, you know, our community is just demonstrated by the Supply Connector and COVID Mobilize. When they see a need, our community tries to step up and meet that need. So we appreciate you sharing with us.
One of the things that is available that we certainly need some additional support. We've been operating a family resource center to provide some basic needs and some a group of teacher assistants and other folks who remained employed to try to deliver basic needs to our families in the community. We're going to try to keep that open into the fall, and I think there's some. They're looking for funding opportunities for keeping that open. It's supplying things, not only delivering prepared meals to families, but also taking food boxes, cleaning supplies, diapers, basic needs that our families have to their homes. And especially those who live in pretty rural areas where they may not have transportation access or ability to access those things. So anything that you guys could do to support that Family Resource Center, at least within Buncombe County, those would be things that we suggest doing. And we've got a place on our website for donations to that particular resource center. But that's been a very successful component of our response to COVID-19. The other piece is just looking at, I mean, right now I think we're supporting our mental health agencies that are private agencies in town to make sure that they stay able to provide services in such a way. And I think that's probably the work of government, working through Department of Health and Human Services, which I've been in contact with a lot. is making sure that those resources exist just to prop up those folks who have had that decrease in income during this period of time, just to help them stay viable.
David, thank you so much. It's almost 2 o'clock, so we're trying not to keep people any longer. I know that everybody's busy, and we don't want to take any more of your time, but we do appreciate you sharing with us. We'll also share the resources that are available in the other counties in the Landis-Sky region as well, so we can support all of those school systems. So please share with us anything that you would like us to include on our website. One comment was, I saw in the chat box, encourage those families to apply for free and reduced lunch. There's also additional public assistance available at this time for those families. So, you know, we'll try to do a better job of getting the word out there. And I think we heard in on the broadband discussion that if that family is in an area that is served by a local cable provider, broadband provider, there is funding available for those families that I think that are on SNAP benefits to receive a much reduced cost there. So, you know, there are resources out there, but we know there's probably not enough to meet the need, you know, during this public health and economic crisis. So, David, thank you for being with us. We also think we appreciate the work of you and your team. Thank you, Emily, Sarah, Erica, for leading the discussion regarding PPE, and also thank Drew Christie for the governor's office for joining us again. Again, go to Landis-Sky website, go to our COVID-19 page. We'll try to include all those resources. Please join us next week. We'll hopefully have another informative discussion to try to address this crisis and to share resources that are available to our region. So we just want to thank everyone for the work you're doing, and we hope you stay safe and stay well, and have a wonderful day and enjoy this, maybe get outside and enjoy this beautiful day. I think that's good for all of our mental health. So thank you for joining us, and again, we appreciate the work that you do.